2011. In Iraq, you don't have that similar fighting morale amongst the people there. But nevertheless, and just to finish just this part of my contribution, there is an opening here, because those people who were pro-Al-Qaeda in Iraq before, some of the more nationalist and some of the more religious political forces as well, are now actually have changed their position and have come in alliance with the Baathist Syrian-led resistance in Syria. So on the in the Syrian arena and issue, there's actually an opening where these two forces can come together. And really, it's in the interests of the Iraqi people that these two communities do come together and foil the plans of the British and the United States that has been railed against them.
But on that note, I'd like to refer to something else here, Ms. Wasfi. You know, a lot of the media, when you look at them now and they're describing the situation in Iraq, they're saying that the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant has presented itself as the Sunni community's champion, in their words, against Maliki's Shiite-led government. And I was wondering if this is, you know, accurate representation of the facts, because we are hearing now in the Kurdistan region, the Peshmerga forces, for instance, they're saying they want to cooperate with the Iraqi army to protect the borders. It looks like Shias, Sunnis, Kurds, Christians, the entire nation of Iraq is being threatened by these terrorists and extremists.
Yeah, and I would have used that very same phrasing when the U.S. invaded. But speaking of terrorists and extremists, but I mean, this was the nature of, I mean, Iraq is a difficult, very difficult country to rule. And by entering and completely destroying the infrastructure after an illegal invasion, this is the mess that's left behind. But I think that what we have to respect is that this is a battle now going on between one side, which does include, as is being accused or alleged, Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the United States and other Western countries on one side, and Iran and Syria and their allies on the other. And Iraq is now, as was already described, it's becoming part of the battlefield. This is not, Iraqis have had enough. They have been bleeding and dying for 23 years, since 1991, and that's the Iran-Iraq war before that, so I'm not including that. But this is now the colonial wars happening, and Iraqis are dying and caught in the middle. And the leader, the so-called leader of Iraq, says, well, the Iraqi army hightailed it out of there, but now we'll somehow get weapons to the civilians living there. I mean, this is absurd. Nouri al-Maliki has very close ties to the Iranian regime, and they're now allowing the nation of Iraq and the people of Iraq, they want them to fight the battle, which they have been fighting already for 23 years. It's enough. That there has to be an end to this. I hope it comes sooner rather than later.
Mr. Chandan, I'd like to hear your views on that as well. What Ms. Wasfi said there about Maliki's handling of the situation, saying that people in the area can be armed now.
You know, I would agree with Sister Dahlia in as much as the people of Libya, the people of the DRC, Congo, and the people of Iraq, these are some of the most traumatized, impacted peoples that we have in the global south, that enough is enough. We need peace. We need respite. But unfortunately, the situation at hand is that how do we get to that point strategically? How do we actually build towards that? How do we build capacity to achieve that peace? And we need some viable routes towards that. Now, I'm not going to disagree with the faults of Maliki, because they're glaring and they're obvious, and it's predicated, as Sister Dahlia said, on an illegal and extremely violent and traumatic occupation by Britain and the USA. So it's a dysfunctional state, and that's an understatement to put it. So I've got no quibbles about how bad the Maliki government is and how dysfunctional it is. That's true. Nevertheless, Iraq is still being plunged deeper into a crisis and a trauma by London, Paris, and Washington and its regional allies in Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and in Turkey. And why? I mean, it's an ironic twist of history that the victors actually of the US and British aggression against Iraq are twofold, really. One, it's actually the Iranian Islamic Republic, which actually strategically found its position strengthened as a result of that. That was not the intention of the USA and Britain at all. And secondly, it's actually the death squads, which, and let's remember the SAS in Basra. around, I think, 2005, when they were caught with explosives and Arab clothes, pretending to be so-called jihadis. I think that's a totally wrong term to call these people, because jihad is an honorable and a liberatory concept and ethic. These people are absolutely the opposite of that. So really, we know that the United States and Britain, through their covert strategy, are deeply implicated in this, using a death squad strategy that they started in Latin America. And the US ambassador, the last US ambassador to Syria, Robert Ford, was a student of the mastermind of the Latin American death squads. That was Mr. Negroponte. So really, there's a direct lineage in developing this. Maliki is not liked. With all his faults, he is not playing ball totally with the West, because he is helping to protect the Baathist government in Syria. Yes. So really, there's a deeply contradictory, violently profoundly contradictory situation what we had, but we must grapple to find some unity through all of this and find some kind of path, Tariqa, to some kind of peace.
Yeah, you know, Ms. Wasfi, Maliki described these attacks as, I'll quote here, vicious. And he said the militants will spare no Iraqi. And we were showing some images here on Press TV that were posted on the internet, allegedly showing these people, supposedly from the ISIL, shooting indiscriminately at civilians who were fleeing Mosul. So it looks like they are actually, you know, very vicious, and they're not looking at who they're killing. They're killing anyone in their way. And this brings me to the question of, what do you think is behind this? What's the origin of this group, the ISIL? What's the intention of the creation of this? Why would countries, for instance, like Saudi Arabia, be financing and supporting this very extremist group that calls itself, unfortunately, Islamic?
Well, the short answer is power, greed, control of oil, and building an empire, and trying to hold on to all that and all the money, all the profit that has to be reaped from it. When we're talking about, I have no doubt that extremists are targeting civilians, targeting anybody in their way. But we have to acknowledge that the government of Nouri al-Maliki is doing the same thing. And this is the inherent problem. This is the reason that there were demonstrations, peaceful demonstrations, that began in Iraq and were prominent in Anbar province in January 2013. And after a year of those demonstrations, the peaceful collections were dispersed violently by the Iraqi army under direction of the Iraqi government. So the bloodletting has come from the Iraqi government. It is on a much grander scale, unfortunately, but that balance has to be worked out. That's the real trouble for the Iraqi people right now, are the helicopter gunships, which came from the United States, and the mortars, also likely coming from the United States, that are being aimed supposedly to target the groups of these extremists, but they're hitting civilian homes and they're killing civilian people. I don't want to repeat myself, but this is now 4 days. This is now the fifth day of bombardment. People are trapped in their homes. They lack electricity. They can't get food. Their water supplies are limited. This is a desperate, desperate time, and the aggression has continued because of what Maliki has done.
Mr. Chandon, do you agree that Maliki is doing the same thing?
I mean, the thing is, there's been unjust things that have happened, and I'm aware of the demonstrations which Sister Dalia is referring to in Anbar province, and obviously that didn't help the situation. Nevertheless, I mean, this goes before to 2013, doesn't it? It goes back right to the occupation, when then post 2003, the war of aggression by the USA and Britain, we had this emergence of the second generation Al-Qaeda led by Zarqawi, which was just brutal in its ruthlessness and bloody-minded nature against Christians and people of the Shia faith, and also against Sunnis, who they branded whatever they would like to brand to justify their depravity against them. So I think yes, Maliki has a responsibility, but I would argue Maliki and the entity that he represents is a profound contradiction. Within that contradiction, there is something actually positive to defend, but there's also the very deeply problematic aspect to that contradiction as well, and that we actually do have to hold to account when understanding and analyzing this the other major players, because Iraq has always been, like, you know, many other countries across the global south,
yes,
has been the victim of external players who are trying to manipulate the situation for their own interests. And really, I think the great challenge is the challenge of unity in defending their neighboring states, particularly Syria. And this is a chess game again about weakening Iran's strategic allies in the region in order to soften up Iran and to destroy Iran, like they destroyed Libya and they're destroying Syria and they're destroying Iraq.
Well, thank you very much. I'm afraid we've run out of time. I'd like to say goodbye to our guest, Sukhand Chandan, political commentator with us there live from London, and in the US, Iraqi justice and political activist, Dahlia Wasfi in Wilmington. Thank you so much for being with us. That does bring us to an end of this edition of The Debate. Goodbye.